what this is all about is just about what we can do and how we can get involved in what God is doing on the earth, reaching out to people in different ways. And you know, sometimes we just come around in a supportive way, and everybody is needed. You know, it doesn't matter what you feel your skill is, there's something you can do to help the work go on and move forward. And so this is what this lesson is really all about. And it comes from Romans chapter 12 and 1 Corinthians chapter 12, really the base text for this lesson. So we're at point number 2 there at page 5. We start off by saying that the redeemed are the only people that God has. There's nobody else. It's only the ones that got saved. There's nobody else that God has to work in his vineyard. That's us. Now God will sometimes use, as he did in the Old Testament, a complete heathen to do something. But in general, his workforce is the church. People that are saved. And there's nobody else. I mean, you know, you cannot have a heathen preach to you the gospel message, because they don't know what it is. They don't believe it anyway. So we're the people, and that we must do it. So we always do all things with that understanding that God only has me to reach those around me, those close to me. He'll have other people too, but you know, we have to assume some kind of a responsibility also to be involved in getting the message out, getting people encouraged, getting people to listen or build them up, edify them. There's a lot of work. Once we get saved, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. People need to be taught, they need to be encouraged, they need to be helped in different ways. So it's a big machine, really. And we're just a part of it. It's just a small part, but every part must do its share. 1 Peter 1 and verse 12 there at the bottom. Apostle Peter is talking about this. He says to them, talking about the Old Testament prophets now, it was revealed that not to themselves, but to us they were ministering the things which now have been reported to you through those who have preached the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things which angels desire to look into.
I always was intrigued by that.
It is, yeah, but you know, angels have never been lost. They don't know what it is to be lost and redeemed. They have no clue. They look in from the outside, but they don't understand what it's like. And so God doesn't use them to preach the gospel. He uses people who've been on the other side and come over, because they know what they're talking about.
So what does he use angels for then?
Ministering spirits.
They are ministering spirits, and they help us. They help
so
us.
So they only help the redeemed.
Yes. Yeah, and I, you know, they'll, as we'll see, they'll go to people, and there's an example here, and connect them up with people who can share the gospel with them, but they themselves don't.
I think it's only in Revelation where there will be an angel that brings
it. No, we're going to, yeah. Only in Revelation where you see an angel is coming and he preaches the gospel. That's the only time when you ever see that. So here's let's look at the Amplified Bible there at the top of page 6. It was revealed to them, the Old Testament prophets, that their services, their prophecies regarding grace, was not meant for themselves and their time, but for you. In these things, the death, the resurrection, and glorification of Jesus Christ, which have now been told to you by those who preach the gospel to you by the power of the Holy Spirit who was sent from heaven. Into these things even the angels long to look. It's a mystery to them. So here's the story where there's an interesting connection where angels got involved. And, you know, sometimes they're involved without us knowing. We just don't know. They work behind the scenes often, and they're involved, and we don't even know that. But here's the one that showed up. So there is this beautiful story of Cornelius over there in the book of Acts. And he was a Roman soldier, so he was not a Jew. But he believed somehow. He believed in God, and he gave alms to people that needed some money. And he prayed. And one day, while he was praying, an angel showed up and told him to go get Peter, because Peter will explain the gospel to you. And he gave him the address where Peter was. He sent two men out to go get him. And a very interesting story. And then Peter came and preached the gospel to them. So the angel himself did not bring the gospel. He had to bring somebody else to do it. So that responsibility to preach the gospel is ours. And, you know, when we say preach, it doesn't mean you stand behind the pulpit. You know. You may have coffee with somebody and just witness to them. And there are opportunities where we can do it and ought to do it. I know some of you do. And that is actually the most powerful thing. And you know, when unbelievers come to church, they already come prepared not to be affected. They know what's going to happen. And, you know, so they have their guard up. But when you sit with them and you have coffee or you're just talking, whatever, you know, casually, and you begin to share either your testimony or answer a question they might have, something like that, that goes in a lot easier. Much easier for them to accept it. Also, they say, well, the pastor is a professional, he's paid to do it. You know. But my friend here is not paid to do it, so I have more faith in what she does. That type of thing. So we do have a responsibility as children of God to do it. I want us to go to this parable in Matthew 25. And we read from verse 14.
Parable of the talents.
Yeah, the parable of the talents. Yeah. It's a very interesting parable. That it took me a very long time to really understand the whole thing.
The parable of the talent?
Yes. Okay, verse 14. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country. That's Jesus. Who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. That's your talents and your gifts and your skills. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. Now look, to each according to his own ability. To each according to his own ability. So God knows what you're capable of. And immediately he went on a journey. Then he, who had received the 5 talents, went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. What's interesting about this whole thing, he just gave it to them, he said nothing, he just gave it to them. Kind of safekeeping idea, just keep it safe. This guy, he went and he traded and he earned 5 more talents, verse 17. And likewise, he who had received 2, gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his lord's money. And after a long time, the lord of those servants came and settled accounts with him. So he who had received the 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. His lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also who had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I've gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered seed, so you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers. And at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So, that parable, of course, applies to us and the skills that we've been given, or the talents, something that you can do. And what's interesting about this parable is that this master didn't tell them what to do. He just gave them the money and left. So I figured out after a long, long time, the real message that's hidden in this parable is initiative. Those two took their own initiative and did something. And the lazy guy, he did nothing. He was scared, in fear. See, that's the thing we need to be careful of, that we don't feel, well, I'm too scared to talk to somebody or to whatever, you know. Let God use you in some way, because that's not a good thing. You know, one of the people that we read of in Revelation that are not going to heaven are cowards. It's shocking. But it's true. So that is the message of this parable, that what has been entrusted to us must be used for the master. Let's use it for him and his work. And also it says there at the end of the parable that he who has, more will be given to him. And you think, now, has more of what? Find the same thing in Matthew chapter 13, the parable of the seed. It's he who has more initiative, he who has more willingness to do something with it, more will be given to him. And it says he will have abundance. So you are rewarded. God will always reward you when you do things for him. It's always a reward. Not to mention the eternal reward that's coming. You know, because we spoke about that from when we went through 1 Corinthians, that there's going to be a judgment seat, not to judge our sin, but to hand out awards according to what we've done on earth. It's called the Bema seat of Christ. It's like a merit assessment meeting. And we'll be standing there, and he will go through our lives and judge what we've done and then we will be receiving some reward. Now, some people say, well, you know, that's an eternity, you know, don't worry about it now. Well, if you take life on earth that's so short, and eternity that never ends, it might be a good thing to start thinking about those rewards. Because we don't want to sit there one day and say, well, I should have done this and I should have done that. Because, you know, this is the time to do it. Okay. I quoted that whole passage. Let's do it. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 39, there and there. On that page. All flesh is not the same. There's one kind for humans, another for animals, and another for birds, and another for fish. There are also heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and stars, and earthly bodies, humans, animals, and plants. But the glory and beauty of the heavenly is one kind, and the glory of the earth is another. There is a glory and beauty of the sun, another glory of the moon, and yet another distinctive glory of the stars. And one star differs from another in glory and brilliance. So it is with the resurrection of the dead. The human body that is sown is perishable and mortal. It is raised imperishable and immortal. There's a verse there in the book of Daniel, I believe it's in one of the last verses. It says that those who bring many to salvation will shine like stars in heaven. So rewards that God ends up. Now, of course, there's a lot of work to be done when we become Christians. It's too long a list to even begin talking about it. You know, think of people who do administration work in churches and Christian organizations. It's necessary to do it. They may not be talking to or preaching to people, but they do a very important task that needs to be done, and some other things. But at the end of it all, it must always have as an end result the salvation of souls. That's the biggest thing in the mind of God, saving the lost. That's the number one thing. That's the number one thing in the mind of God, is saving the lost. The rest are also, it's also important, but saving the lost is right at the top. And, you know, you get these people, it's easy for them to talk. You know, my dad was one of those. And he would never miss an opportunity to speak with people that he encountered. I remember one day he had to go to see the doctor, and we were sitting in a waiting room, and so it was while I was visiting there, so I was there, my mother was there, and he was there, and one other person. And when we walked in there, I knew he's going to get it. And so we were sitting there, and he's starting a conversation with this guy. Just general stuff. And just by about the third sentence, the gospel is coming out. It's coming out before the guy went in to see the doctor. He had the gospel. It was easy, you know, for him, it was very natural and easy. For others, a little more difficult. We have other talents and gifts, and God uses us in different ways. And we need to support one another in a role that God has placed us. Doesn't matter what it is.
How did that person receive your dad?
Well, he was talking. My dad was sharing the gospel with him. He was listening very intently. And then the doctor called him to go in. So we don't know.
Escaped.
Yeah. You know, but the seat was sown.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, my dad had a way, he didn't cover the gospel in cotton. He just gave her the raw as it is. So there's no fluff, nothing. It's just the way it is.
You've got a clear message. Very clear.
That's yeah. Good. They might sometimes be.
Here's that version, Daniel, right at the bottom. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. See, that's the big thing. That's the big thing. Is to get people saved. Become more.
I have a question. Yeah. So those who are asleep in the dust now.
They're dead.
They're dead.
Yeah.
That's where the are dead. They? Where are their souls?
That verse is in the Old Testament, so Old Testament believers were what was known as the bosom of Abraham. It's where the righteous dead went. And there is another place where sinners went, unbelievers went. That's a place of torture. There's a story in the New Testament that Jesus told, and it's not a parable, it's a true story, of a rich man, Lazarus, a rich man and Lazarus the beggar. And the rich man lived well and died and went there to the altar. And Lazarus, the poor beggar, also died. He went to Abraham's bosom.
And the rich man knew that Lazarus because he was sitting at his gate.
Yeah, so he saw him and he was asking, send him over to put some water on my tongue because it's hot yet. And he said, no, there's a chasm here we can't cross. It's too wide. And he said, send somebody to my brothers so they won't end up where I end up, anyway. I said, no, yes, Moses and the prophets, listen to them. They can listen to them. If they don't listen to them, they won't listen to this man. So it's a serious situation. Yeah.
So that's the Old Testament.
Yeah. New Testament, the Bible says there in the book of Corinthians, if we die as believers, when you're absent from your body, you're present with the Lord right away. And unbelievers go to the abode of the dead. It's kind of a waiting place. They're waiting. They'll be judged. Judgment day is coming and they'll be judged.
So they're not in hell?
No. Well, I don't know. Some people say, yeah, people who had visions.
Hellish.
Yeah, it's hellish. And especially because you know, I have no opportunity left. This is it, and I'm going to be here forever. There's no way out of this. The way out of this was when I was alive. And I missed it.
So at the rapture, those who are passed on and their believers will ascend
first.
First.
Yeah.
What are they ascending to that they're not in now?
They'll be united, their spirits that are with Christ will be united with their new glorious body.
Okay.
And us who are alive, when that happens, will also receive a changed body, but they will be first. But it's in a twinkling of an eye, no waiting.
We won't even notice it.
No, it's so fast, so fast. So our service that we do for the Lord are mostly to other people. So it's not me directly to Him. It is me to other people in His name. Because people are His concern. So our work on earth is to other people. Well, we do our private devotions and our private worship and our personal order, of course. And that is our personal edification and our building up of our faith and all of that. But the work that we do for Him is to other people. It's always to other people. It's not to ourselves. What we do for ourselves is to strengthen us and help us along, but it is to enable us to do what we need to do. So here's an interesting little situation. After Jesus rose from the dead, you remember that before He was crucified, He told Peter, before the rooster crows, you'll deny Me 3 times. And it happened. So after He was raised from the dead, he had something to share with Peter about that. So look at this now. This is after Jesus was raised from the dead. And that passage there at the top of the page. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah. So you always get scared when you get called by your full names. You know something is up. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love Me more than these? And said to Him, yes, Lord, you know that I love You. And said to Him, feed My lambs. See? And you show your love for God? You do it to other people. He said to them again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love Me? And He said to Him, yes, Lord, you know that I love You. He said to them, tend My sheep. He said to Him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love Me? Peter was grieved because He said to him the third time, do you love Me? He said to Him, Lord, You know all things. You know that I love You. Jesus said to him, feed My sheep. So you can see when He talks about sheep, that's kind of a pastoral ministry. He's talking about, take care of My sheep, feed My lambs. Feed My lambs would be new Christians. Tend My sheep. Look after My children. Feed My sheep. Teach them. Minister to them. It's always to other people. So our ministry to the Lord is to other people. And that's how we serve Him. By serving others. And it's not, you're not always appreciated. Let me quickly add that. People, even Christians, don't always appreciate that. But that doesn't change anything. You know, Jesus spoke about us as Him, as the vine and with the branches. And He said, My Father is glorified when you bear much fruit. So the fruit comes through the branches, not the vine. Now when you look at the fruit tree, the fruit on that tree is not for the tree. It's for everybody else out there. And not everybody who's eating of that fruit is going to like it. I'm just saying that because it can be very discouraging when you reach out to people and help them and just throw it back into your face, and you probably think, why am I doing this? Well, you're not doing it for, you're doing it for the Lord, right? And I was thinking this morning that Jesus had His ministry on the earth for 3.5 years. And it was a miracle ministry. I mean, Jesus was speaking and teaching. You can't go better than that. Yet, when the day of Pentecost came, there were only 120 people gathering. Not a lot of people. So, it's not for us to measure our success by results that we see. That's very misleading. It's very, very misleading. It can be very discouraging. So we should not look at that. Look past that. And just say, Lord, it's up to you. I did it for you. I served you. I did it for you. And you know, Jesus even said, you are blessed when you're persecuted. So it's all part of the package. Thank God some people do appreciate it, and that's nice. It's very encouraging. But it's not always so. I just needed to mention that because, you know, I mean, especially when you reach out to sinners and you start talking about Jesus and what Jesus did for you, some might hate you for that. They just openly hate you.
I often wondered about Jehovah's Witnesses going door to door and people just like, you know, you hear them, oh, here they come, you know, and they must have a lot of doors slammed in their faces.
Yeah, they do. Same with the Mormons. But they also feel blessed because they've been persecuted. But they're not being persecuted for the truth, of course. They're not speaking the truth. So that's another question. So as we go through life, we do so with that understanding that we serve in God's kingdom. And that's always in the back of our minds. We're doing kingdom work. For the kingdom, we're serving the Lord in the kingdom. You know, there's Matthew 6. We'll have to go to Matthew 6, verse 33. Talk about this. Beautiful verse. Actually, really speaks to us. Matthew 6, and verse 33. And this should be our attitude. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Righteousness is right standing with God. And all these things shall be added to you. All these things is just your daily needs. He's talking about. God will take care of you. Seek first the kingdom. Like those two men in that parable of the talents, they had the interests of the master was a priority to them, was important to them. And that's how we serve. We serve with that attitude. We serve, it's always kingdom first. And right standing with God. And if we're into that, God will take care of our needs. And he will. He will, I can guarantee you. 1 Peter 3:15 says, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you. And I think this is probably something that we will see more and more as, you know, as darkness falls. Our world is falling apart, you know that. And people are panicking. And you come along and you have hope and peace and it looks like you have it all together. People are kind of like, how come you are like peaceful? So we always need to be ready and say why. Tell them why. That's a great opportunity to share the gospel. Tell people why I don't fear. Why I don't really worry. Because I know something else. Okay, let's look at those points to ponder. The Lord uses our voices, our hands and feet to expand his kingdom with his instruments. Jesus will call us to give account of what we did with what was given to us. But words will be handed out when you get to stand before the Lord. So they'll be, if you go on the internet, you go to one of these Bible dictionaries and you put in crown, you'll see there's a lot of crowns, kinds of crowns that will be handed out, different ones, for different things. So you may be walking around with a crown in the millennium. There are crowns, rewards. Our service to the Lord is done mostly to others. So always be ready to serve Him. And here's a good one. God, Jesus wants us to be busy when He comes back. We don't want to sit and fool around when the rapture happens. It'll be nice when you're busy, you know, doing something for Him when He comes back. So we just don't know when He's coming. So how do you feel about your talents? You need to take stock sometimes and see what you have, right? Because everybody has some.
What are you really good at?
Well, when I think about my previous life, it was, you know, administration, organization. So I don't know how I would serve in that way, but that's where I think organizing four kids in a household was the first, you know, bit of it, and then afterwards all the volunteer work that I did. But not for God, just for
earthly things. Before I went into full-time ministry, I was a admin manager in the bank head office. I did admin. And that helped me in church life. Let me tell you, she did admin too in the bank. And I found out that you can have the best ministry in the world, with the best talents, but if you fail in your admin, you fail.
Mm-hmm.
You fail. Your admin fails, you fail.
You know, I always read about these life coaches on the internet, you know, and I always have a lot of questions. But something you can do is you can assist people with their administration, get their lives for them, you know, and then in that you put the gospel. Because let me tell you, people, I look at young people today, they don't know how to do a bank reconciliation.
No.
They, you know, basic, very basic things. They don't know how to organize their house.
They weren't taught financial planning.
Nothing. And you can start a little business like that, but you bring in, you know, the gospel into that. There you go.
There is so much we can do,
yeah.
You know. Personally, I never, where I grew up, we never spoke English. Nobody spoke English, so I couldn't speak English.
Yeah.
And I had to go through the bank where I was forced to learn English. Never knew one day that all the work I did would be in English. So it's hidden. You know, there are some things hidden inside of you that you still need to discover. Abilities. And it doesn't have to be the best before you use it. You know, because sometimes people say, oh, I'm not really good at that. Well, it doesn't matter. And I found late in my life that I can maybe teach, and I don't have to be the best teacher. It's not about that at all. It's just about starting and doing something, and then you go and see what God does with it. I'm amazed to see where our teaching ministry has gone. You know, it's just astounding. I mean, we didn't plan to do it. It just kind of happened because we had nothing else to do. And you know, it's gone around the globe, I don't know how many times now, and gone into different nations. I'm dealing now with Pakistan. I'm training people in Pakistan. In Belgium, we have a school in South Africa. And, you know, it was never planned. It was never planned. It all started just because I started. God took it and ran with it. So, you know, we have this tendency to look at what we have and disqualify ourselves. Well, it's not good enough. It's good enough. It's good enough to start. You know, we've learned that the only job when you start at the top is when you dig a grave. You always start at the bottom. You never start at the top. If you're going to wait till you get to the top, you're never going to do anything.
But there are many things. So what are your strong points? Let's hear.
Visiting lonely people, encouraging them, finding the opportunity to speak to them about Christ.
Yeah.
I really appreciate this study. It's really got me motivated in this area. And to see, like what you said, you don't have to be the best.
No. To
impact others' lives. And you don't have to be there to see it do the job either. That's
right.
The planting of the seed.
Yeah.
And since I've really just been praying about this, and I really put it as a priority of mine, it just seems like there's all these opportunities opening up where I can, you know, speak to somebody that, like the other day at Cards, it was a very odd situation how that worked out. So with some people, and I've known I could do these things. I'm a good caregiver. I don't mind caring for people who are ill, or I'm a good hospital sitter, you know, just to visit people who are in the hospital or people who are there to support their loved ones who are just sitting in the hallway that, you know, need a magazine to read or a friend to bring them some lunch or something. Those are the things that I think of.
That's great.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Because you meet people at the point of need, where they are maybe more willing to listen. Mm-hmm. And that is very powerful.